by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Carrie Simpson, and this is Roadkill Radio. Joining me tonight in the co-host seat is...
Ron Gray. Glad to be here. And we're talking right now with Jerry Shapur.
We are. And we're talking about a big event that has happened in Canada. And, of course, that is the decision out of the BC Supreme Court by the Chief Justice Bauman regarding polygamy. Jerry, thank you for joining us here at Roadkill Radio. You were one of the lawyers that was involved in this case. Tell us about the decision and what your thoughts are on the decision.
Thank you very much for having me on. The decision... is a long one. I think that's the first thing you can say. It's one of the weightiest decisions I've ever been involved in. In fact, I am sure that it is the longest decision we've ever received from a judge, over 350 pages long.
Wow.
The judgment, though, can be summarized in one sentence, and that summary is that there is no such thing as so-called good polygamy. And that's a direct quote from the judge. And I would add to that by saying that the judge reviewed the evidence about all of the harm that is caused to both young girls by trafficking in the, you know, these young girls and the young boys by being kicked out of these communities. And the judge concluded that there was no society that has ever adopted polygamy where children have not been abused, both the young girls and the young boys. And because of that, he said, this is, in effect, always going to be harmful to children, always going to be harmful to society, and always going to be harmful to women and men. And therefore, there is no circumstance under which polygamy can be justified in a free and democratic society. And concluded that the fact that someone may have a religious belief behind that polygamous society does not, under the charter, exclude them from the criminal code and the general application of the criminal code. And further, just to complete the thought, effectively, he said that because polygamy is the equivalent of slavery and human trafficking, there is no circumstance under which a religious motivation for slavery or human trafficking can override the need, the, in fact, imperative that the Parliament of Canada protect children and adults from the horrors of a polygamous community. And I can tell you that when I went into this case, I had the theory down. But I was shocked over and over again by the stories that came forward of the abuse that is a natural consequence of these polygamous organizations.
Now, Jerry, you were representing an organization, and I did sit in on the first day of this trial, and I was shocked and amazed at how much representation, how much interest from all different viewpoints were represented in that courtroom. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in the organization you represented.
I represented the Christian Legal Fellowship. The Christian Legal Fellowship is made up of lawyers from across Canada who care about the development of the law in Canada and care about their Christian values and want to speak up for the best that is in the Canadian legal system and the best that one can find within the Bible. Now, those lawyers were, in this case, on the same side as the University of Toronto and LEAF, the Legal Education Action Fund for the Status of Women. These organizations are typically on the other side of the litigation from the Christian Legal Fellowship. For example, we were on the other side of LEAF in the case of the definition of marriage as a same-sex construct, and Parliament's decision to say that marriage is both a heterosexual and a homosexual organization, I guess you could say, that it can be both same-sex and opposite-sex individuals. So we were on both sides of, on either side of that case, but in this case, because everybody cared about the young women and young men that were impacted by this practice, we were on the same side. We both saw that it was of the highest priority for Parliament to protect the young women and the young men. And, you know, it may, you may say, well, it's just a few families. It's just a small place in Bountiful, but that's just not true. Polygamy is practiced across Canada, across religious and political spectrum and cultures. You have Christian, you have Jewish, you have Muslim polygamy, and it's there and it's happening, and in almost every case, it is about human trafficking and the abuse of underage children.
Jerry, I agree with you. This decision, and this is the decision, it's 281 pages off of on my printer, okay?
Lengthy. You didn't have the appendix.
And you ran out of paper.
The you know, it is constructed and crafted to, I mean, the detail, the explanation, it is a very thorough decision that we have before us and full of content. Now, I'm curious because, you know, quite a few of the news media made big headlines out of the fact that, you know, religion took a backseat to the best interest of women and children. From your viewpoint and that of the Christian Legal Fellowship, is this concerning to protection of religious beliefs? Is there anything in this decision that people should say, wait a minute, you know, this is, you know, the slippery slope we're now about to embark on? Did you see any of that? Because I, you know, I've got some ideas on that. I think the way it was crafted and the language that the judge used made it very clear that the issues are very separate issues in this one.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, we all know about the some of the faith groups that use poisonous snakes to demonstrate their faith. And we also know about the situation where some faiths deny their children medical care. And that is always and has always been, for as long as society has been operating, a case where you have the laws that are the criminal laws of Canada and the child protection laws of Canada take precedence over the particular religious belief. You don't say that it's not valid or not accepted. You recognize it, and the judge recognized that there are some who might, for religious reasons, choose to be polygamous. But then you ask the question about harm. And in cases where there's demonstrated harm, and he said there's clearly demonstrated harm here, when you have that demonstrated harm, then it is in that kind of case that Parliament is free to choose to make a particular activity a criminal offense. Okay. And he didn't say they had to. He just said in this case, this was an option amongst the options that are available when dealing with these complex social issues. It's one of the options available for to Parliament to protect children and women. And then Parliament did act. And he said they acted appropriately and used a means that was the least intrusive means of protecting the rights of the children in this particular case.
Jerry, I've got two questions. And the first is this. As I understand it, this reference case was sent because the Attorney General of BC was not sure whether he could or should prosecute in Bountiful. That's one question. Do you think that prosecution is likely now to go ahead? The other one is, since this rests on harm, and especially harm to children, and we know that children do not do as well when they are raised in same-sex couples, households, do you think that this decision would provide any leverage to overturn Bill C-38, I think it was, the bill by which Parliament legalized same-sex marriage? Those two different questions.
I'll answer that last one first, and the answer to that is no. There's nothing in this that could in any way be used, because this is about Parliament's choices. This is not about what Parliament can and can do, or I'm sorry, it is about what Parliament can do. It's not about what Parliament can't do. So it's not about telling Parliament what to do. In fact, it's about a judge saying these kinds of social issues, these complex social issues, are best left to Parliament, and the decision made in this case, because there was demonstrated harm, was one of those cases where even if there is an impact, and he said he wasn't sure that there were any individuals that had this religious belief because no one would come forward and claim to have that religious belief, but there were suggestions that individuals did have this belief. And because of that, he said, I'm going to assume that there are individuals who believe this. And he said, in this circumstance, because of the harm, I'm satisfied that it is one of those cases where Parliament is justified in overriding a religious belief and practice.
Strictly legal.
Now, with respect to the first part of your question, what the Attorney General wanted to do and will do, he wanted to prosecute. He tried to prosecute twice, but he was advised the first time that it was unconstitutional, and he was advised the second time that he had missed a step. So he wanted to make sure that he got this issue out of the way first. And I think he's going to wait, or she in this case, she's going to wait until the end of this litigation. Once the final Court of Appeal has spoken on the subject, then I think at that point in time, this Attorney General will take steps to enforce the law as written, and will not, unlike the Quebec Attorney General, will not become a lawbreaker himself. This is a case where the Attorney General will properly enforce the criminal code as written.
I just want to pick up on that because you sort of opened the door there on the appeal process.
Yeah.
Are we going to see an appeal in this case? Should we be shocked and surprised? And if there is an appeal process and it goes all the way up to our activist court at the Supreme Court of Canada level, are we in for a bit of a shocker there if this lands on their doorstep?
Well, I would say that the chances of appeal are 99.999. That is because there is already instruction to the other side to try to do the best they can. The amicus curiae has been retained by the Attorney General to try to do all that they can to succeed on their side. And that's their instruction, and they have been given a budget to do it. So if I'm a lawyer and I'm being told, valiantly advocate your position and here's a budget to do it, then I'm going to appeal. And they have the right of appeal. There's no discretion there. It's a right of appeal to the British Columbia Court of Appeal, and then from there to the Supreme Court of Canada.
What is their budget,
now,
Jerry?
On the question of the Supreme Court of Canada, one of the things that gives me great comfort is that from both left and right, from both secular and religious, we have all sides that have been on opposite sides in the Supreme Court before. We have all sides on the same side here. The government, as well as organizations that are concerned about women's rights and children's rights and life and social and family issues. So I would think that in this case, we're going to see the potential. In fact, I would expect a unanimous Supreme Court of Canada decision upholding Chief Justice Bowman's decision because, number one, it's so well written. It's so well documented. He spends over 1,000 paragraphs just outlining what the facts are. And I don't think there's a text anywhere in the world that goes into greater detail on the impact of polygamy and the history of polygamy. So if the Supreme Court of Canada finds a way around his decision, it will certainly be the most dramatic reversal of fortune I will have ever seen in Canadian juristic history.
Jerry, you mentioned the amicus curiae. Now, we should be very clear for our viewers that the court appoint an amicus, which is the friend of the court, or did the province appoint the amicus?
The province did so pursuant to the order in council that was set up under the reference legislation. So this was not something that the judge chose to do. This is something that the Attorney General and the Lieutenant Governor and Cabinet chose to do. But it is by convention what is required at all times when the government does this. The government always, by convention, must do this. And if the government didn't, then the courts separately definitely would.
Jerry, you mentioned the budget. Do you happen to know offhand what the budget for the amicus curiae is?
My guess is that there is no limited budget. In other words, they haven't been told you have to do it for this price. I think that if you want me to guess at the cost to the government per day, I would suggest to you that the cost per day is over $2,000 an hour times probably 8 hours a day. So that's probably $16,000 a day. And we're probably talking about, we've been at this probably, we've had about 4 months of intense courtroom work. So you just start multiplying that out and you're into the millions of dollars. So it's well over $1 million so far. And I suspect that we'll be driving through another million before this is done.
Then, and in the interest of fairness, you've received some form of budget from the government as well to present all the interest of those that your organization represents?
No. The court specifically refused to allow or provide any funding for any of the interveners.
I am outraged. I have a... So they're funding one side and not the other?
Well, no, they're funding the two AGs are funded by the court taxpayers, and the amicus on the other side is funded by the taxpayers. So you've got kind of two against one on this for funding, and then any intervener that wants to come in is certainly welcome, but they do so on their own dime.
Okay.
Jerry Chibiar, thank you so much for your time. You're a good friend to Roadkill Radio. We thank you for all your good work and just your ability to articulate sanity and sensibility within the courtroom. We appreciate the good efforts of the Canadian Legal Fellowship or the Christian Legal Fellowship and for having a voice that for so many years has not been heard and organizing their efforts. Your support, can people send money? And I know that Jerry is probably jumping on
an airplane.
But Christian Legal Fellowship, Ron, they've got a website.
Yeah, we can put a link on our Roadkill Radio webpage, and people will be able to click on that and go. And I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure that they have a donate button on their website. It just occurs to me, though, Carrie, that the judgment does contain this sentence that says, "Here I mention, without limitation, harm to children or to the psychological health of the spouses and to the institution of monogamous marriage." The Bill C-38, I refer back to Doug Farrow's paper that he released just before it was passed by Parliament, and he said, "Canadians have an obligation not to recognize this bill if it is passed," and it was passed. We have an obligation, a moral obligation, a citizen's obligation, not to recognize the institution of same-sex marriage, even if Parliament says so. And his foundation for that is pretty serious, too. So, I think this question of damage to the institution of marriage, it might be an issue in the years ahead.
Okay, we're going to just take a quick break here, and we'll be back. We're going to bring you an update on all that's happening with my little adventure with the Vancouver Police Department, Culture Guard Exposé, and all the games and antics that are resulting from that. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Roadkill Radio.
Hello, I'm Ron Gray, speaking to you for CultureGuard.com. I want to bring you up to date on some new news about Carrie Simpson's interaction with the Vancouver Police Department. If you go to CultureGuard.com, we will soon be posting some recent developments in this attempt by one active citizen to say something is wrong and someone should do something about it. If you'd like to get email notification when new developments are coming, go to cultureguard.com, leave us your email address, we'll put you on the list, and we'll notify you of each update as it's ready to go on air. This is Ron Gray for CultureGuard.com.
And we're back, Roadkill Radio, and we're talking about the reference question involving polygamy. Now joining us is Doug Christie. And again, another lawyer that was part of the ensemble. I'm referring to it as an ensemble, Doug, because as I said in with our earlier segment, talking to Gerald Chippier, I've never seen so many lawyers in the room on the opening salvo of this case. So you were there and you were representing?
I was representing the Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression, who support the amicus curiae who was trying to strike down the law.
Mm. So you were on the opposite side of how the decision came down then. But I know because you've been, you're a familiar guest here on Roadkill Radio, but one of the concerns that your client had was about the implications to religious freedom in this nation and whether or not this would either strengthen our right to those religious beliefs as protected under the Charter or if it would start to erode those rights. What's your read on the decision as it relates to protection of religious belief?
Well, it definitely erodes the whole concept of religious freedom, particularly in the most, I would say, intimate and personal relationships that a person could possibly have. The institution of marriage is probably older than the institution of same-sex marriage, certainly, and we didn't seem to have too much trouble overcoming religious obstacles to that phenomenon. And that, we see this as a progressive deterioration of the whole concept of religious freedom.
Now, in and I have to agree with you. I found the decision to be quite bizarre, and I'll use that term, as it relates to a comparison with the issues around same-sex marriage, because same-sex marriages, relationships are notoriously non-monogamous. All, you know, they're not in the interest of children. There's ample evidence to prove that. All those factors which seem to weigh heavily with Chief Justice Bauman's reasoning on why polygamy is bad. Yet the,
right.
the same...
Well, there was never a reference in regard to whether or not prohibitions of same-sex marriage would be constitutionally valid. And it seemed like it was politically more popular than the paternalistic situation that might be seen as a factor in polygamous marriage. So it became, I think, an unfortunately politicized issue. One of the things that I think traditionally has been true is that judges are given deference on findings of fact. But I question whether that deference is really applicable to findings of fact that are not based on evidence before you, but based upon the opinion of experts, where you could pick and choose what opinions you prefer. And by that I mean a lot of the evidence in this case about the alleged harm to women and children was anecdotal, which I can't say is all necessarily false by any means, but it is, after all, a personal interpretation of one's life. And I suspect that in regard to any union, be it monogamous marriage of a heterosexual nature or a monogamous marriage, indeed, of homosexual nature, you could certainly bring forward lots of people who would say that that institution harmed them. And, of course, when it comes to government supporting legislation, they always have ample resources to get experts. I think you'll always find that government has the availability of experts because they have the deepest pockets. And I hate to be cynical, but experts always like to look for the next occasion upon which they can be paid as an expert. And the result is that
that's not
cynical. If you rely on expert evidence,
you rely on
anecdotal evidence to be gathered hither and yon from whoever is willing to come forward, you'll always find that the side with the deepest pockets will get the best witnesses, the most qualified experts, and the witnesses who have come furthest, you know, because an expert is someone who gives evidence more than 50 miles from home.
But, Doug, the question, or central question that seemed to be present in this was the argument of evidence of harm. You're right, they did rely on several experts, but the experts were pretty unanimous, and nobody, I don't think, brought any evidence any experts to give evidence that there was no harm. When there's a question between religious liberty, and you know that I'm a man who wants to defend religious liberty, but when there's a question between religious liberty and harm to individuals, well, I mean, let me give you a hypothetical example. Suppose we had a faith, and there have been some such, that practice ritual cannibalism as an article of their religious faith. You know, where would you come down on that?
Well, certainly cannibalism is against the law already, and I'm not certain that any religion could proclaim that as a fundamental tenet, or a religious tenet for that matter. But polygamy, I think if you go back to the Old Testament, you'll find that Solomon had many wives. David certainly
too
had
many
more than
some
one.
People. Yeah.
And
yep.
Let's put it this way, the whole Muslim world has accepted the proposition that for some people it's allowed. So I think it's a little bit too extreme to use the cannibalism example. But what if, and on the other hand, more to the point, what if you were to say that those who marry the church are living in a, quote, marriage-like relationship? And that's certainly polygamous in the sense that there's no need in defining polygamy for there to be any sexual content. The way the law is written, it applies to any marriage-like relationship between a man and more than one woman.
Well, can it be marriage-like without conjugal relations?
You can also extend the concept of harm to religions like the Catholic faith, where it could be argued that there was a propensity for child abuse, which was unfortunately quite prevalent, apparently.
But it's not an article of faith in Catholicism.
No, it's not. But, for example, penance is. And it could be argued from some psychological point of view that imposing guilt on people and requiring that you make a confession before receiving communion is an imposition of unnecessary guilt. It causes harm for some people. I have no doubt that there will be lots of psychologists very anxious to condemn the Catholic Church for that.
Well, there'd be psychologists who...
These arguments can get very political.
There would be psychologists who would say that confession actually is a cure for guilt. It, you know, it removes guilt.
Well, that's true. But
and, of course, the confession is in
some
private.
Some experts said that polygamy is a cure for the fact that there will be soon, with same-sex marriage, there will be soon not enough men who are heterosexual and willing to procreate children to match up with all the women who might want to bear children. I mean, for every homosexual couple, then there are two, in the case of male homosexuals, there are two men who are not available for paternity. And this situation, how likely is it to increase? Well, we don't know. It's certainly tolerable. It's actually condoned. It's congratulated. I guess it's even celebrated.
Well, and the kids are invited to participate in it now, Doug.
Okay. Encouraged to believe that it's the perhaps normal and certainly acceptable way to have a relationship.
Well, in some cases, just because we're digressing here, you know, preferential, because the world is overpopulated anyway, so all those women who want kids and sex and all the rest of it are sorry out of luck anyway, right?
There will be potentially a shortage of men willing to be fathers.
Yeah. Well, wait, this is getting very speculative. I would counter that, Doug, by saying...
I don't know about that.
Look, there are those who say that homosexuality is genetic. Well, if they are right, you can look at any species, not just a human species, any species from a butterfly to a buffalo, if it had a gene that predisposed it to non-reproductive behavior, that gene would quickly die out. So we should be looking at a diminution.
Which I find strange coming from the clergy.
Doug, I have to say that when I saw the decision, my antennas went up, and we have talked about this subject before. Jerry Chippier before in the interview was, of course, very pleased with the decision. They don't see this as a slippery slope. I don't agree with that. I'm more inclined to see your way on this, that I think that this does have implications and ramifications that we are going to see manifest themselves in ways that we really don't like.
Yeah. The, you know what? They've always done this. They always put forward a dangerous proposition, like the state can decide what is an acceptable religious practice, with the most outrageous example first.
Hmm.
And that's how we justify limits on speech. We go to the extreme and say, look at this. Look at how terrible. And the next step is we criminalize those who simply disagree with multiculturalism. Or we criminalize teachers. Then we criminalize policemen because they have to be public officials and they can't have opinions, even in their off time, which is contrary to the publicly accepted point of view. You know, when they say, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, that's when I get very nervous.
Doug, you're giving me the perfect opportunity for a promo commercial to an upcoming Roadkill Radio production that will follow this show. And that I spent...
I've really got to go, and I hope you have a great discussion because it's a very interesting topic.
Well, it's one that I think you'll find interesting because it was just bang on point to what you were talking about in that RCMP officers showed up at the candidate's office that was just running for school trustee in the last municipal election for hate speech because he protested one of the programs that were going in the schools. So... bang on. Okay, Doug, we're going to stay tuned with you.
Well, if we're going to have any rights that the state does not take away, we're going to have to defend those people with whom we may not agree.
Hmm. Doug, before you go, and I'll let you go after this one question, are you in the appeal? What is happening after this decision has come down
now?
Well,
that's a big question mark because somebody questioned whether the amicus could even appeal. But I think it'll go to the Court of Appeal and perhaps we can make some submissions there.
All right. So we'll be talking with you again about this very important subject. Doug Christie, good friend of Roadkill Radio. Thanks, Doug.
Bye.
Now, you see, my antennas are up, Ron Gray, on this whole thing.
And
right?
I understand why, but I'm on the other side of the fence from you and Doug Christie in this case, because in this case they did show harm that is almost universally attached to the practice of polygamy. And you know, when I brought up the idea of cannibalism, I can cite
you, extremist.
I know, but I can cite you religious faiths that do indeed practice cannibalism. It was common here on the BC coast. When there is demonstrable harm, there is an onus on society to step in and protect. Now,
we had that freedom as well. But wait a minute. We had that in the same-sex marriage debate. You know, we can prove there's provable harm to children.
Yes, there is.
We can prove provable harm to society.
Yes.
To the health and, so why is that ignored in that situation? But... you know, held up as the end-all, be-all ideal and when polygamy is involved.
It should not have been ignored in that situation.
Agree.
That's why Doug Farrow wrote his paper about that we have a citizen's duty to not accept Bill C-38 as law.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is how I see this thing working out. Of course, the appeal is going to go through. We're going to go to the Court of Appeal. The Court of Appeal is going to come down with Bauman, more or less. There's going to be a few little caveats. But when we get up to the Supreme Court of Canada, I believe we will see, and I think the Bauman decision will be upheld, but there will be a dissenting view from the activist judges that currently occupy much of the bench. Now, we've had a change of the bench. There's two new justices on the Supreme Court of Canada. It's going to be very interesting, but I believe it will be a division. And one of the things that we have seen in law over the last little while is dissenting opinions seem to have a resurrecting ability now to come back and bite everybody. So it's going to be a very interesting case. I do think there is a bit of a slippery slope concern on this whole issue. You know, let's stay tuned. The Court of Appeal decision will be most interesting. Of course, we're going to continue to talk to the lawyers.
But if the decision had gone the other way, that too would have presented us with a slippery slope. if they said, because you call it a religion, anything goes, that's dangerous too. There has to be common sense. And that's what we need, more common sense on the bench.
But I do think,
Bauman gave us common sense.
Oh, just because he spoke the language you like. You're so biased, Ron Gray, unlike the rest of us that are just open for whatever.
Hey, I'm only biased in my own favor.
Okay, you know? I put it on the record how I see this coming down. How do you see
and
it coming
so
down?
What's going to come down?
What's going to happen at Court of Appeal?
At Court of Appeal, they'll uphold Bauman. It will go to the Supreme Court. It'll be a split decision, but it will uphold Bauman.
Well, you're just copying what I said. But the dissent in 10 years will come back to bite us all, mark my words. So this video is going to have to stay current for 10 years, people.
Stay in touch for 10 years. We'll need your help then.
Kerry Simpson was right. Again. Good night,
and Ron
everybody.
Gray will still be sitting in front of his smart meter. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us here at Roadkill Radio.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.